The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly New Year's Eve party special, sort of. Excitement for Newcastle United fans as they have an attack. Liverpool drop points for the second game in a row. So as Sid would say, hey Liga, there is league. Who will win it? We'll idly speculate and hope no one remembers when we're wrong, or we'll all just say Liverpool. COVID was here yesterday, it's still here today. Spurs Fulham cancelled 3 hours before kickoff. The EFL is happening and so is Ben Fisher, so we'll talk to him and take a look at that. And with the current panel, all you really want to hear is Jordan Jarrett Bryan defend his ridiculous stance on Aston Villa and quite how many meats Mark Langdon had on his Christmas dinner plate. All that, plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. So yes, the panel today. Jordan Jarrett Bryan, how are you?
Season's greetings, very well. How are you, Max?
Yeah, really good, thanks. So we'll get to Villa in part
three. I'm sure we will.
Absolutely right. Mark Langdon, nice to see you from the Racing Post. You all right?
And you, Max? Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
You told us a story just before going on air that I will ask you to repeat at the end of the pod. It is, as you'd expect, vegetable-based. Does anyone else treat you with such lack of respect, Mark, or is only interested in one thing as us?
Yeah, it's growing, actually. Since I revealed it on the Guardian pod, it's what they want to talk about all over the shows that I appear on. Yeah,
it's good to have a gimmick, eh? It's good to have a thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, covers my lack of football knowledge quite nicely.
It's good to have a thing, and yours is gout, or it almost certainly will be at some point. Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello, Max, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. Happy New Year. Your fitness plan's going well. You went for a big walk, didn't you, yesterday?
I did. I walked for nearly 12 kilometres.
Excellent news.
And stopped in the middle of it to have cans of beer, which cancels out the walk, really.
Yeah, you're sort of carbon neutral then, I guess, yesterday. Let's start then with Newcastle 0, Liverpool 0. And not the most boring goalless draw. I quite enjoyed it. I don't know what you think, Barry. I thought you could slightly amend for the first time your cut and paste answer about Newcastle United.
Yeah, I did quite enjoy it. I wasn't expecting a 0-0, that's for sure. I wasn't expecting Newcastle to get anything out of the game. I thought they played very well. I haven't looked on social media, so I don't know if their fans agree or not, but I think you would have to be very churlish as a Newcastle fan not to be impressed with that performance. Obviously, it doesn't excuse the embarrassment of their performance against Brentford in the League Cup, which was diabolically bad and shameful almost, but I thought they took the game to Liverpool in so much as they could. They missed several pretty good chances, as did Liverpool. Carl Darlow was outstanding, as he has been for much of this season. I think he's a very, very good player, and he ensured that they got a point at the end. But this, it certainly wasn't a backs to the wall point. Not at least not for the majority of the game, like, say, West Brom got it at Anfield. But, very impressive performance.
And, you know, you have to, Mark, against Liverpool. You have to defend heroically. And they did. Barry mentioned Darlow, but, you know, Fabian Scher was great. DeAndre Yedlin was great. I'm not sure I've ever said DeAndre Yedlin was great out loud before, but I thought they defended brilliantly, didn't they?
They did. I mean, they got a point at Tottenham earlier on in the season that was, you know, completely sort of, you know, fortunate and lucky, and one of those frustrating performances that I think annoyed Newcastle fans sort of during Steve Bruce's tenure, because they actually didn't attempt to attack in that game at all. And this time, I think that they realised that had they sat back for 90 minutes, eventually Liverpool would have found a way through. So they had to, try to hit Liverpool's weak point, which I think at the moment is that sort of centre-back partnership, particularly with Matip out as well. And, there were moments for them. I mean, it wasn't a Kevin Keegan-style Newcastle performance, so I don't want to get overly carried away by it. But I think that is the template by which Newcastle, you know, should look to play in some of these bigger games. I mean, against Chelsea, for instance, when they lost a couple of goals to nil, I thought it was a ridiculous performance, really, where they didn't put any kind of pressure on Chelsea whatsoever. This time, I felt like they did as much as they could. Liverpool probably still should have won the game, But that was down to Darlow and to maybe wasteful finishing as well.
Jordan, I mean, could they use this then as much as a template or like a blueprint to play teams in the league that aren't as good as Liverpool, i.e. every other team? You know, I think that's what Newcastle United fans want to see, isn't it? It's just some intent.
Do they? I mean, intent, I take that. Yeah, as a football fan, you want to see your team give 100% and put in maximum effort. But I was watching the game last night, and I thought to myself, if I'm a Newcastle fan, what's the point? What is this team? What is this club about? What do we represent? Are we just here to just make up the numbers? They're kind of falling into that West Brom bracket I've had for a few years ago of what is the point of our football club? We don't play good football. We don't challenge for any kind of cups or top end of the table. And they've got now enough Premier League years in the bank to be able to have an identity. For all of Bournemouth's flaws last year, at least Bournemouth's time in the Premier League, their identity was, okay, we're not going to win the Premier League, might not win a cup, but every single week we're going to play a brand of football that's entertaining. And yeah, it might be 5-3 defeats, but we know what we're club's about. If you're a Newcastle fan, what are you turning up to watch? And if that is the template going forward, then it's grim times for, you know.
I thought this was a step in the right direction. I thought this was much less grim than how grim it's been before.
I mean, there's levels of grim, and this is probably the higher end of that level. But that performance for me wasn't too dissimilar to most of their other performances against teams that are maybe not as good as Liverpool. So I just thought to myself, it must be so depressing being a Newcastle fan, because that for me is a Championship team.
Does anybody want to take issue with Jordan?
Well, I think what Jordan has just described there is what most Newcastle fans feel. They want their team to attack, they want their team to compete, and they want an owner who has ambition, or else ambitions beyond just staying in the Premier League. I mean, that performance was a million miles away from the one against Brentford, which has to have been their worst. I haven't seen every game they've played, but I've seen quite a few. And Brentford was a nadir. It was awful. I think that really was a step in the right direction, but I would be fairly confident it will be a one-off.
We'll see, I guess. What of Liverpool, Mark? What did you make of that performance?
I felt like it last season, Liverpool, it wasn't that they got lucky necessarily in those wins, but they didn't have much bad luck. They played like this, I felt, in a number of their away matches. But managed to find victories. If you go back to maybe Sheffield United, where they nicked a quite a late goal and it was a Henderson error. And there were a number of games like that last season where on another day they might have dropped points. And this was kind of that just catching up with them a little bit. I don't feel like it was a massively different performance or even a bad performance, but they just didn't put that finishing touch on it. Normally Salah would take one of those two really big chances he had, and there were, you know, clearances off the line, and Firmino missed a header, and you know, there was the Robertson one where he sort of played the ball down the line and then charged into the box and his touch wasn't quite right, and just little bits like that. So I wouldn't be panicking too much, I think, if I was a Liverpool fan in terms of their title challenge. I don't feel like it was a performance that lacked the intensity maybe of the West Brom one that Jurgen Klopp was talking about. Of course, they do need to sort out this away form because they are dropping quite a lot of points. But I didn't really feel like it was a terrible performance from them. And I'm sure they'll be fine heading into the new year.
Yeah, I agree with Mark, actually. I wouldn't panic either. But I mean, the last few weeks, the Palace result aside, some of the draws may be slightly concerning for Liverpool, in as much as it's come at the same time as United, Man United and Manchester City's form. Their trajectory seems to have kind of, on an upward scale at the moment. But I've still got Liverpool to win the title because I base my title winners based off of trust. I'm a very trustworthy person. I'm big on trust, Max. And I trust Liverpool over the course of 38 games to win more often than not. I don't trust United. I don't trust Manchester City. And I think that's why I would stick with Liverpool to win the title. But I just want to briefly mention and show some love to Andy Robertson, Because I think last year, the last couple of years, Trent Alexander-Arnold's got all the praise in terms of their defenders and fullbacks for sure. I think he's not far off of being already one of the Premier League's greatest left backs already. I think he's so good. He's not only quick, but he's got that kind of tenacity that even if you think you've beaten him, that determination just says, like, you're not going to beat me. You're not going to beat me. I'm not going to give up. His delivery is good. He never seems to kind of tire. In the 85th minute, he's still sprinting back and forward. His concentration levels are really good. And I just don't think he gets the praise that I think he should. So I'm a big fan of Andy Robertson. And last night, he was the guy that stood out for me in that Liverpool team.
Barry, how many teams are in the title race?
I'd go one or five. I think Liverpool will probably win quite easily, but if they don't, I'd give Everton a shout, I have to say. I'd give Manchester United, Manchester City, and possibly Leicester.
Chelsea and Spurs, 6th and 7th.
I would give Everton more of a shout than Leicester, I think. I think they seem to have got the consistency they have been sorely lacking in recent years that has prevented them from breaking into the top four. But I'm not saying I think Everton will win the league. I would give them a shout.
That's what it sounded like to me. Mark, do you agree with Barry that the title's going to Goodison?
Well, it'd certainly be one way of winning the Everton Cup, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
They won the league instead. I still think it's two. I still think Liverpool and Man City, you know, they've not maybe been at their absolute best. And yet I still, you know, Liverpool are still top and Manchester City are not playing dazzling football. But if you have a look at their clean sheets, that's really stepped up. And people have been saying last year, well, that the problem was defensively. They've sorted that out with Dias alongside John Stones. Aguero is still to come back. So I think it will, maybe not pushing the boat out here with sort of, you know, a big call for 2021, but I would still be very surprised if it wasn't one of those two teams that won the league.
Curtis says, some love, please, for John Champion and Ali McCoist on the pod, please. I just think they are the best TV commentators we have. They take the game the right amount of serious, it's not English, that's why I'm not one of the commentators, but but you know, they enjoy it. They appear to be enjoying each other's company. They appear to be enjoying the game. They can have fun about Mrs. McCoist making beef and horseradish sandwiches for them, and Ali gives you insight, and they don't, you know, I don't know, I just think they're just such a breath of fresh air. Even though neither of them are particularly young, they're a joy to listen to.
I agree. I remember Adam McCoist from the days of ITV when they had the Champions League way, way, way back. And he was always my favourite kind of pundit and analysis, because you're right. He's one of the few guys out there that strikes the balance well of insight and making you think about things you might have missed and not recognised or seen, but also doesn't take it too seriously. I think a lot of pundits either offer no insight or take themselves too seriously. And he strikes that balance, I think, quite well, for sure.
He always seems to be having the most tremendous time, and I've only met him once and found him to be an absolutely smashing bloke. You know him better than me, yeah. Max. But I don't know if you've seen the clip from Gillette Soccer Saturday at the weekend, but he was watching Cardiff against Brentford when Will Vokes scored from inside his own half. And just the description of the goal, you know, have some of that. But he was just having a great time, and he's a bit like Micah Richards. I think his enthusiasm is quite infectious, and you know, some people don't like Micah Richards, think he's a bit of a clown, but I just love watching him because he puts me in a good mood.
Totally, Mark.
I think the lesson to be learned is that, you know, the co-commentator should sound like they're there having fun. I mean, they're being paid, you know, to be at a football stadium where, you know, the vast majority of people in normal times are paying to be there. And you sometimes, or particularly like European Championships or World Cups, like some of them feel like they don't want to be there. And, you know, it's some kind of chore to have to describe this 90 minutes of Romania against Switzerland. Whereas Ali McCoist is one of those where you genuinely, or at least it comes across, he's absolutely loving being there. And you know, that and him and John Champion, just, they're not pretentious, they don't take themselves too seriously. And I think there's a lesson maybe for a lot of us there, and certainly those that are commentating, co-commentating, to take on board.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Ali McCoy's Instagram, he Instagrammed, he's quite often looking at deer in his garden and getting as excited about the deer as he is about Will Vogt scoring from the halfway line. Producer Silas says he was the best captain on A Question of Sport. I mean, I'm a Bill Beaumont, Emlyn Hughes era, so I'm not giving McCoy, I'll give him credit, but I'm not giving him too much. The other game last night was Spurs Fulham, which didn't happen. It was called off 3 hours before kickoff because of a spike in COVID cases amongst the Fulham squad and backroom staff. On Instagram, Jose at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, another good Insta account, by the way. We still don't know if we play best league in the world. The Premier League statement says it's not discussed pausing the season, has no plans to do so. The league continues to have confidence in its COVID-19 protocols to enable fixtures to be played as scheduled. And these protocols continue to have the full backing of the government. With the health of players and staff the priority, the league is also fully supportive of how clubs are implementing the protocols and rules. You know, some of the papers today saying shambles. I wonder, Jordan, if you think the criticism is fair. I sort of feel we need to have as much understanding as we can have from all sides at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I'm no fan of the FA or the Premier League or any sporting governing body, pretty much. But on this one, I do have a little bit of sympathy for them. I mean, Jose Mourinho complaining about the lack of time and how close it was to kick off before they were informed. Okay, I can see how that is quite an inconvenience, but they clearly wanted to try and give every possibility for that game to go ahead, and a decision was made that it couldn't go ahead. So I think there's been a little bit of an overreaction in terms of slamming the authorities on this. My view is, I've heard a lot of people this week, and by people I mean fans, pundits, broadcasters, players, etc., talking about the need to keep football going because of the service it provides football fans in the country. This kind of element of mental health, and, you know, in a really grim year, football seems to be giving many, many people that ray of light. And while I understand and I get that, I'm sorry, but if I'm a player, my well-being, and that's my family's well-being, trumps the need of entertaining millions of people in the country. So if a decision needs to be taken that football needs to stop, then football needs to stop. If that's what we need to do, it's not going to be great, won't be fun. But I think if you believe that this virus is as deadly as we're being told it is, then a decision at some point soon has to be taken. And that may well be, you know, a curtailing of competitions. I think the League Cup may have to go. I think the FA Cup may have to go, because all the signs now are pointing towards numbers of cases rising. And what my fear is, in 2-3 months, we'll look back on something awful happening to somebody and we'll think to ourselves, well, the reason why we didn't take a decision was simply because of fixture congestion. And I'm thinking, is that the big priority here? I get the contracts and the money involved. I understand that. But I'm sorry, when we're talking about people's lives, fixture congestion, for me, that shouldn't be. I get why Talk Sport and where I work and Sky Sports and BT Sport have to talk about that. Those are footballing issues on footballing programs. But the bigger issue here for me isn't football congestion. It's how do we protect the players? And the players, I think, should be asked a lot more about what they think should be done as well.
Yeah, and I do wonder about this idea of a circuit breaker. I don't quite understand how it would work unless you bubbled them like the cricket teams were. You know, like, because, okay, you take 2 weeks off the Premier League or 3 weeks off or whatever. The players are still picking their kids up from schools. If their schools are open, they're still going to the supermarket. They're still, you know, their wives and kids aren't, you know, isolating for this whole time. I don't see how that works at all. But
no, I agree with you. I don't see how it would work either. Just be prepared to go with whoever knows what they're talking about decides. Increasingly, it seems that a lot of people are really flying by the seat of their pants. So
I also think we need to kind of a bit of forward planning in terms of if they are going to curtail games and they're going to, you know, have a circuit break, that's then going to have an impact later on. So for me, the idea of European competitions and this pan Euros that they're still trying to have, for me, is ludicrous. For me, it's sad, but they might have to just scrap the Euros. And it's nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. But the reality is, why wait until the last minute to decide on that rather than now? Look, let's scrap the Euros. Give ourselves a couple more months.
Won't somebody think of the Scottish?
I bet there are some Premier League managers who probably want to scrap the Euros, I reckon. Mark?
Well, the World Cup taking place in the winter of 2022 does give sort of an option to have a European Championship at a different time again, if needs be. I'm not saying that that is what anybody wants, another winter tournament or something like that. But usually, of course, there's a Summer World Cup. The fact that you have got another few months would enable you, in theory, I think, to be able to either extend this season or
I can't have the emotional roller coaster if it's coming home twice in a year.
Christmas.
Anyway, moving on. We obviously talked quite at length about Leeds United and Karen Carney yesterday. After we finished recording, Leeds released a statement, and their owner Andrea Radrizzani apologised to Karen Carney. He said, "I'm very sorry. Karen was abused on social media. I wanted to defend my club and our players from a comment which I felt was harsh from Karen on air. Our tweet wasn't offensive, simply stating that we won the league by 10 points. Leeds had earlier condemned the abuse. A club spokesman said Leeds United completely condemns any abuse received by Karen Carney on social media following last night's Premier League game with West Bromwich Albion. Everyone at our club respects Karen greatly for all she's achieved in the game, as well as her work in the media and the charity work she undertakes." I don't want to spend too long on this. We talked about it a lot yesterday. The one thing I find really strange about this is, just on a sort of total human level, if I tweeted something out about one of you three, if I tweeted something about Barry and you started getting real horrible abuse, like of a level that Karen Carney was getting, or I tweeted something about Mark or Jordan, I would just delete it and say, look, that wasn't what I was trying to do. And I just cannot understand why they haven't deleted it. It just on a kind of, I did something, I didn't mean it, someone to get really upset, someone to be really abused, someone's getting abused, I'll just take it down because I'm a sort of normal person. Does that make any sense?
It does to me, but I think that the taking it down, then I think they would interpret that as we were wrong in what we were saying. They would see that as being seen as we were wrong. And while they may not be endorsing the abuse that Karen received off the back of the tweet, I can only interpret that them not taking it down is them saying, well, no, we condemn the abuse, but we stand by the tweet. So why would we take it down? I'm with you that the nice thing to do would be to take it down. But they, I think, would view that as, therefore, we are in the wrong.
Yeah, but then just say, look, we think we're right about the opinion. We don't think that was right, but we are deleting it because we're normal and nice.
Yeah, maybe once the tweet is also out there, they may think, what's the point in taking it down? The tweet's out there now, so I don't know.
Very frustrating. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Ben Fisher will join us for part two. We'll talk about the EFL. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's talk about the EFL with our EFL correspondent, Ben Fisher. Hey, Ben, happy new year.
Hi, Max. Likewise to you and all the listeners.
Ah, that's very kind of you. I keep forgetting about them. Happy new year to the listeners too. I care about you as much as Ben. Here's a question for you regarding sort of COVID testing from Nifty Palms, who gets in touch a lot. Just one thing about the EFL COVID testing. Why aren't they doing it? And why aren't the PFA using buckets of money to help the players stay safe?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think a lot of club chairmen would like the PFA to be dipping into reserves. Different chairmen have told me different huge figures that apparently they're sat on. Ultimately, as we know, sort of stating the obvious, it's very expensive. And I think we'll be a bit careful here, not perhaps the appetite to do that. The expense it would rack up. I think it's about 10 grand per week if you did it twice a week. Obviously, it varies depending on the size of squad, etc., staff. It's just very expensive, Max. And ultimately, I think nobody really wants to foot the bill, as it were.
But the PFA, Ben, are literally responsible for player welfare. So do they not have an obligation to do it?
Yeah, I mean, the PFA have sort of pulled from pillar to post on different matters. I think ultimately they think what they should be paying for, perhaps, you know, other people could be paying for. Ultimately, clubs, you know, control those players. Could the club do it? Possibly. Could the league do it? Possibly. In the case of the FA Cup, the FA is stepping in to pay for every club to that wouldn't be tested to be tested. The EFL doing another round of testing next week. Should stress that was sort of before this rise. So I think that was sort of planned. They did it at different points of the season, did one at pre-season, I think one just before the season started. Although that feels a long time ago now. And some clubs higher up the chain have kept doing tests, although naturally those are the ones that are better resourced.
So more importantly, Ben, you know, 7 games postponed in League One. Is it Morecambe's next 2 games that are called off? What are people saying about the likelihood of this season finishing or having to be extended? There are different rules for the EFL compared to the Premier League that they could go on for a bit longer.
Yeah, I think, again, there's sort of varying appetite. John Coleman, Accrington, has sort of said, you know, if we need to stop, that's what we need to do. I think another game, literally a few minutes ago, is gone. Shrewsbury v Crewe is the latest to be suspended in League One. I mean, it is very bleak, particularly in League One. None of the top 10 played on Tuesday. As you say, 7 of the 12 games then were postponed. Whether they can run on, I think, is a lot more doable in Leagues 1 and 2. I think if it crept up to the Championship, that would be an issue because obviously you're talking of Euros and teams with international players. But I think there is scope to extend for a few weeks if need be. But ultimately, I don't really know if a 2-week or 4-week circuit breaker, it seems to be the phrase that is doing the rounds, actually helps. It just maybe that moves the problem down the line and then teams would be playing sort of a crazy amount of games in a very short space of time. And I think ultimately some clubs are very worried that we could be in a similar position to PPG and all those things we kind of thought we got rid of for good possibly might, you know, be creeping up on the agenda, as it were, if it continues.
And what about the sort of general financial health of clubs? I know it differs massively from club to club and they've had the sort of Premier League bailout. We talked a lot about the dangers of these clubs going out of business. Without listing every single one, how is it currently looking?
Well, I think it's quite fragile because, again, maybe it's an obvious thing to say, but with no fans now at any games, but, you know, some clubs were clinging on to that is a bit of hope, you know, a green shoot, if you like. And that money, as we know, is hugely important. But I think no fans at games for a long time, and I can't see that just sort of changing anytime soon. I think certain clubs are really not insulated that well. And we're already seeing a few cracks. I know Chancery at Sheffield Wednesday has tried to sort of blame COVID for some of the problems there, which it is a bit more of a complex issue. But we are seeing a few cracks across the board, definitely.
Ben, how are teams travelling at the moment? Do you know? Because obviously, when they first came back in Project Restart, there was all this, you know, travelling in sort of separate cars and, you know, met loads of buses or something, you know, London teams travelling up on the day, sort of, you know, to northern places, etc. I mean, how can sort of League One and League Two teams sort of do that? Are they just all travelling on one coach, as far as you know, and sort of the problems that brings in terms of the virus as well?
Lots of clubs that I obviously can't speak for everyone, but lots of clubs I'm aware of are still travelling on multiple coaches. I know higher up the chain, I think they're even thinking about going from sort of 2 to 3 where possible. But certainly lots of League One, League Two clubs are travelling on more than one coach. I think the problem is, it's like somebody said the other day, ultimately, even if you have a break, a circuit breaker, and you move it down the line a little bit, well, those players then would need to get fit for that game, that next game, and therefore they're going to be together. So I don't think it's easier than we would like to, I think, just get rid of this issue in terms of the players spending time with staff, other players, and all the sort of bits and pieces at the club.
Let's talk about on the pitch. Huge victory for Brentford last night against Bournemouth.
Yeah, great win. Big result for Brentford that will no doubt sort of fill them with belief. They do look the real deal. Maybe last year, right when they sort of mattered most, maybe suffered a little bit of stage fright, but they do look that another year wiser, even though they've obviously lost some real big players for them. They just have this knack of, you know, recruiting so well, as we know, and they've done it again. Obviously, Ivan Toney scoring lots of goals, but across the board, Josh De Silva looking really good. People like Tariq Fosu-Henry, who scored the winner last night against Brentford, showing that they have got a bit of, you know, strength and depth as well, which will be massive as the season goes on. Disappointing for Bournemouth, because I don't think Bournemouth have really got into their real stride yet, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Swansea nil, Reading nil. Disappointingly, Ben, before the game, some Swansea fans booed the taking of the knee, which is depressing. Like, we've seen it at a number of clubs, haven't we? And we hope it will go away. We don't see it going away. I don't know if the club have said anything, because I know when Cambridge did it, which obviously I found deeply enraging because I'm a Cambridge fan, you know, they spoke well afterwards about finding the fans and throwing them out. I don't know if the club have said anything yet or not.
Yeah, no, the club have sort of said, you know, they want to get to the bottom of it. It's happened a couple of times as players have taken the knee. I think horns and car horns and a bit of, I don't know, noise outside the ground. Obviously, no fans inside the ground. Mm. But yeah, just shouldn't be happening. And club have made it clear they want to get to the bottom of it.
It's almost even worse if they can't, they're not even at the game and they're, you know, making the effort to get there. God, like, just stay at home. Anyway. On the pitch, goalless draw. Was it a good game?
Yeah, do you know what? Swansea were really good. On another day, I think, I don't know, they'll probably be wondering how they didn't score. Another day, they'd probably win by a couple of goals. Reading would be certainly relieved with a point. Steve Cooper doing a really good job at Swansea. I think since he's arrived, that's something that the net profit there is around 45 to 50 million. Extraordinary job on very tight resources and budget. And they're right up there. So credit to Swansea.
Norwich top, aren't they? They drew 1-1 with QPR. Not the greatest result, but do they look as good as you'd expect them to look?
Yeah, again, I put them in a little bit of the same basket as Bournemouth, in the sense that I feel like they're yet to really fully click. Don't get me wrong, they're doing a lot of things right, hence where they are. I think 11 of the last 12 seasons, that those who have been top at Christmas have gone up. So it certainly bodes well. But I do think there's a little bit more to come. But certainly they're in a very good place, Max.
Rich asked a question about Sheffield Wednesday. You mentioned them earlier. Obviously, they sacked Tony Pulis. What kind of strategy is it to hire a whole team of coaches and sack them after 2 months and then do the same again just before a transfer window? Will we now get a desperate manager or one who's simply ignorant of what's gone on at Hillsborough?
Yeah, it is the question, is it? Who would want to be the Sheffield Wednesday manager? Certainly at the moment, lots of problems there behind the scenes. Chan Siri has spoken this morning, saying that players have now been paid in full because the November salaries were capped at, I think, £7,000, which they've certainly got a lot of players over that threshold. Cash flow in a sticky situation there. And I think reading between the lines, and I should stress that is only reading between the lines, but I do think that, you know, Tony Pulis made it very clear he wanted to strengthen in January, certainly high up the pitch in terms of a striker. And I think that the wage issue looms large now in terms of what happens with potential embargoes and things like that. So they're in a very tough place. I mean, they were anyway, obviously started the season with a 12-point deduction. That got halved and you're thinking, this is, you know, we're moving in the right direction. But since then, it's just been chaos. So, not a good time to be a Wednesday fan, for sure.
Rahul says, talk about Derby County as a sort of an order. Okay. And how well Wayne Rooney's doing. He's played under Sir Alex, Jose, Van Gaal, Moyes. He should make out to be a fine manager, I suppose.
Yeah, he's doing well, to be fair. And I think credit to him, because it's easier, to say it now, but he did put himself out of sort of the line and said, look, I think it's going to serve the team better if I come out, because he wasn't playing very well, let's face it. And since then, he's sort of been directing things on the sidelines. And they have been picking up results. I think they've won 2 of the last 3. They've got a decent sort of first 11, let's be honest. They shouldn't really be down there, but they are light up front. Let a couple of strikers go in the summer. So, and also a word on Steve McLaren, who's gone back there in an advisory role. Don't know exactly what he's doing, but certainly it's probably a good sort of shoulder to, rest on. I think cry on. I mean, Rooney's in a good place, Max, let's remember. So let's say rest. They're doing something right, but, you know, it is tight down there. You know, Wickham have got that win the other day and they'll think they can stay up, so.
Barry, if you were sad about something and you wanted to pick a former England manager shoulder to cry on, who would you? Who
Bobby
would you
Robson for? Is the correct answer to that question.
Well, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Well done. Thank you. For some reason, I was going Sven, but clearly yours was the sensible and correct answer. You wanted to touch on Cardiff being on the off the pace, Ben.
Yes, Cardiff not in a great place. Mehmet Dalman, the Cardiff chairman, has made it very clear that he expects Neil Harris and his team to be in among the top six in January. Obviously, we're nearly there, or we might be there, if, depending on when you're listening. And they're not there. They're mid-table. They've got assembled a very, you know, sort of deep squad, plenty of talented players. Harry Wilson in on loan. They went big on Kiefer Moore, who has done well. And it's not quite happening. And the latest defeat to Wickham, not exactly where you want to be if you're going to be in the top six.
Mark, you had a Grimsby-based question.
Yeah, probably my first one of 2020, Ben. But Paul Hurst has gone back to Grimsby. He's had a couple of bad times, Ipswich and Scunthorpe. Is he any good as a manager? Or was he quite lucky when he sort of had that Shrewsbury team that he nearly took up?
Oh, that's a horrible question, isn't it? I think he did an unbelievable job at Shrewsbury that time to get them on the brink of promotion to the Championship. Not all that long ago. It feels a long time ago, doesn't it? But a couple of years ago. I think at Ipswich, it was a massive change at the time. They tried to bring in a lot of players that had played in the lower leagues all in one go. I can't remember the numbers, but I want to say sort of a dozen plus. And it didn't work. And Ipswich are a big club. And I don't think really that was a huge surprise to anybody, because if that did work, it would have been like, wow, look at this. You know, you've got so-and-so and so-and-so. I think they brought a couple in from Accrington, a few other places. And if that had worked, that every club would be doing that. So Scunthorpe, again, perhaps just not the right fit at the time. And yeah, it goes back to Grimsby, and they're in a real bad place, right down at the wrong end of League Two. So yeah, no better time really for a sort of fan's favourite, if you like, to go back there.
Yeah, and it's a shame that it didn't work out for Ian Holloway, because he's just great value, and like, he was his real heart on his sleeve, you know, he really cared, you know, and he sort of, I think he moved to Grimsby and he just was really a bit part of the community, and he was so desperate for it to succeed. And, you know, he's a very passionate guy, and it's a shame for him. Finally, Ben, you've written Barnsley dark horses, keen to touch on Accrington, and Newport worthy of a mention. So take it away on all those three.
Yeah, I just think Accrington are really interesting in League One. They've got three games in hand on the league leaders, Lincoln. Obviously, a lot of that owing to COVID-19 and games being postponed. They play Portsmouth on Saturday. Hopefully that game goes ahead. Will probably be a real sort of litmus test of where they're at in terms of their credentials. But it's a really interesting blend of players there. They've got people on loan from your Chelsea's and sort of Newcastle and in Watford. And then you've got people, I don't know, sort of released by Premier League clubs, like Joe Pritchard, for example, who was the under-23s captain at Tottenham. He's really found a home then. They've got a few like that. And John Coleman is just doing an amazing job at Accrington, and pound for pound, Accrington are probably still one of the best stories in the country, let alone the Football League.
Newport?
Yeah, Newport, top of League Two. And just coming up, I mean, doing really well in the league. But we know they've got form for a cup upset, and they've got Brighton in a couple of weeks. So, probably a couple of weeks now. So, obviously, they've knocked out Leeds, Leicester, and a few others before. If often the cup is kind of not helped them in terms of the league, so it'd be interesting what happens there. I'm not saying for a minute they're going to rest players or anything like that. I think they'll really go for it, but they need to find a way of juggling the two, because when they've had these cup runs, they've not been as high as they are now. I mean, they're literally, you know, top of the league under Michael Flynn. And yeah, they'll want to sort of fight on both fronts, but obviously it'd be great if they could go up.
Sure. And speaking about people who you really, you know, embed themselves in the community, Michael Flynn's brilliant, isn't he? He's just so good for that football club.
Yeah, he's just he's Mr. Newport, isn't he? He's done all types of jobs there, sort of seen the good, bad, and the ugly, and he knows that club inside out. And yeah, would be great to see them get up. I think they're a little bit nervous. They've got Scott Twine on loan from Swindon, who has a penchant for a worldie from about 30 yards every other game. I think they're a bit worried that Swindon could recall him. But yeah, they're in a really good place. And just to sort of go back up to the Championship, because you know you mentioned Barnsley. Yeah, they're on the fringe of the playoff places. And yeah, nobody probably thought they could be there, but they're really mixing it. And since Valerian Ismail, the former Crystal Palace defender has gone in there. He's picking up some really impressive results.
Ben, I feel completely informed.
Thank you. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. Signing off for 2020, Ben Fisher, Guardian Football Weekly. Goodbye. Cheers, Ben. Thanks for coming on.
Cheers, Max.
Ben Fisher, our AFL correspondent there. That'll do for part two. In part three, we get to the good stuff. Jordan on Aston Villa, Mark Langdon on his Christmas dinner plate. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's look at the Premier League games. There are games on Friday, by the way, which you're probably listening to this on Friday, which is New Year's Day. 5:30 Everton, Barry's champions elect Everton, taking on West Ham United. Manchester United play Aston Villa at 8 o'clock on Friday night, which leads us to the questions for Jordan. We mentioned it on the last pod, Jordan, that now you're getting... People are now watching for Aston Villa's results purely because of you digging your heels in ridiculously about Dean Smith.
I've been on Twitter about 8 years now, 7 years now. I've been on Twitter. My account has never been as active in that entire 8 years as it has this last 6 months. I'm getting tweets from people that support teams in the Romanian second division and bloody the Conference League over here, you know, chucking it at me. First of all, it's more the Aston Villa fans, I mean, our fantastic producer, Silas, aside, that really annoy me now, make me want them to lose games now. They're so needy. I mean, bar Leeds fans, they're the worst fans out there. It's so bad. They've been good. Their draw a few days ago against Chelsea, I thought was a really good performance. What's really impressing me more about Aston Villa is that they're becoming more than just Jack Grealish United. Which is quite encouraging. I'm really liking Traore. He's developing, because he was awful a couple of years ago. He was really bad, but he's developing into a really direct attacking player. McGinn is back to full fitness now. We're seeing what he can do. They've got a top keeper that they took from my club, Arsenal, in Martinez. And Douglas Luiz, I think, was the one shining light last season, apart from Grealish, that really seems to be he's combative, but he's got some quality on the ball as well. This is a really good test for United, I think, and Aston Villa. I think Villa are slowly and slyly announcing themselves into a European race here. I don't think United are in a title race, despite where they are in the league. As I mentioned earlier, I don't trust them. But I think it's a good test for both teams. And yeah, Dean Smith's doing an okay job.
It's almost as if there's somebody at that club who's getting those players to play well together and improve. And I just wonder who it might be.
John Terry's there. He's respected, you know. Who else is there? Craig Shakespeare's there. You know, there's some good people.
When are you going to admit defeat?
Jordan is basically like the Leeds Twitter account. He won't delete his comments because it would be an admission they were nonsense.
It's true, isn't it?
Let's be clear. I mean, there's some good players in that Villa team. If you gave me Lewis Hamilton's car, I'm going to drive pretty well. Now, I'm not saying that Villa are the Lewis Hamilton.
But hang on. You said, you know, if we're saying, you know, Dean Smith is Lewis Hamilton, like...
The squad is, the players are.
Okay, so what's Dean Smith in this analogy?
Well, Dean Smith Mikel
Arteta is someone who's never driven a car, yet he decides he's better than Lewis Hamilton.
And also, Jordan, if you got in Lewis Hamilton's car, you wouldn't get around one corner. I'd be hugely confident without crashing it.
At AVI11A, which, as you can tell, is just at A Villa, says, how many Arsenal players does Jordan think would make it into the Villa starting lineup based on current form?
Current form, you're looking at probably just one. You're probably looking at Saka. Mm-hmm. Saka gets in that team. Gabriel. Maybe. I'm not a Tyrone Mings fan. I think he's good. I don't think he's particularly great. I think he's overhyped. Just those two, really. So, look. My club are doing a shit. Villa are doing pretty well. Mikel Arteta's on the rise again, but Dean Smith's doing a decent job. All right? There we go.
Okay, fine. It sounds like an admission of defeat, doesn't it? Jim brings it all together. Would a pound of quality butter, the fancy stuff with sea salt, be a better manager than Dean Smith? What would you prefer, Mark?
What, Dean Smith or the butter?
Yeah, what Okay, here we go, Mark. The question is this, right? Your house is on fire and Dean Smith's in it, and so is a pound of high quality butter. What are you saving?
The butter would melt, wouldn't it, in that situation? I'd have to go for Dean Smith purely because I used to ghostwrite Martin Ling's a column for him. And at the time, Lingy's number two was Dean Smith. And he always used to say how great Dean Smith was going to be. And I don't know if Jordan would agree, but it looks like Martin Ling sort of proved spot on with that when he was his assistant.
Just quickly, sorry, Max, let's not forget that Aston Villa should have been relegated last year. There was a scandalous decision that kept them. That decision aside, they're probably going down. So this is all a weird, surreal world we're living in where they should technically be in the championship and I would be correct in my assertion.
Just let it go. Then every time you're on the pod, it's just someone saying, oh, not Jordan, and another one of his hot takes. You know, that's not what this is.
They DM me.
This is the intellectual. This is the cerebral end of football punditry. We're not here for hot takes. Anyway, Spurs leads on Saturday. Barry, will this be a good game or a bad game? Because obviously every Leeds game is good and every Spurs game is bad. Give us a hot take, hey Barry.
My hot take is that I think it will be a very good game, and I find it difficult to pick a winner. So luckily they are playing against each other and we might get one.
Yeah, if the game goes ahead, of course, but like hopefully. Palace, Sheffield United, Brighton Wolves. John said, would it be possible to describe Brighton with the same 15-second soundbite for every game this season? I think so, yes. Play some nice stuff. Don't score enough goals.
Can't defend corners.
Yeah, should Graham Potter think about mixing it up a bit? End. And we'll do that again. West Brom, Arsenal. just because of Jordan, I'm desperate for West Brom.
I know you are.
To win. Sunday, you got Burnley, Fulham at midday. They're hiding that one at midday. 2:15, Newcastle, Leicester, Chelsea, City, 4:30. If that all goes ahead, City are opening their training ground or have opened their training ground, haven't they? So we think that should go ahead. And Southampton, Liverpool on Monday night. Bristol Saints says, have Saints already deployed their own circuit break in front of goal? So they're playing all right, aren't they? They've dropped off a bit. Old Firm derby, 12:30 kickoff. Rangers v Celtic. Here's Baz's mini Fitbar preview.
Well, this is a huge game because Rangers are currently 16 points clear of Celtic. Celtic have three games in hand. If they were to win all those three, and there's absolutely no guarantee of that happening, Rangers would still be 7 points clear. So this game could technically give them a 10-point buffer as we go into the new year. And by the looks of them, they're going to take some pegging back. Celtic have sort of got their act together. I think they've won four league games in a row, but they've had far patchier form than Rangers, who remain unbeaten in the top flight. Best start since 1928. And I think they're going for their 14th league win in a row. So Steven Gerrard and his Rangers are going to take a lot of pegging back by Celtic if they want to win the much coveted 10 in a row.
Privash has been in touch to tell us about the third division of Russian football. I don't know how far down the leagues Barry's Russian Dasher goes.
Not that far.
Okay. To tell us about FC Sakhalin. To get to their closest away game, third division Russian football team FC Sakhalin have to travel a sixth of the circumference of the earth. They haven't won any away game this season. They've won the league previously, but they refuse to get promoted because then they have to travel much further and more frequently to play away games. Sounds like an excuse Jose would love to have. Isn't that great? Well, good luck to FC Sakhalin and to all the FC Sakhalin fans who listen to us, I suspect is naught. To the big question, James, what was on the Christmas table at the Langdon household? Would he eat a sprout if it was smothered in butter?
No to the Brussels sprouts. So had turkey, roast potatoes, Yorkshire pudding, which I think is a little bit controversial, but we do have Yorkshire pudding.
Not for you, it isn't.
Well,
it's a vegetable not the most for you.
It probably was the lightest thing I ate. We had Yorkshire pudding, pigs in blankets, and then sausage meat, and that was it. But then on Boxing Day, we did exactly the same all over again, and I just swapped the turkey for lamb.
Ah, that's great.
Mark, can I just ask Mark, is the vegetable ban something that is beyond yourself? Is it the whole family doesn't have vegetable, or is it just
No, it's mainly me. My son, it's a bit difficult to persuade him to sort of eat vegetables when he sees me not, but he'd be sort of more to my side of the family, I suppose, in that regard. The wife, she gets stuck into the, all the traditional trimmings that come with a Christmas dinner. And my daughter sort of in between. She likes sweet corn is one of her favourites, not with as much butter as what I do.
Before the pod, we were talking about, the technology of recording this. And I suggested that Mark would struggle with any real technology because he doesn't know what a parsnip is. But I was wrong. You do know because you've been burnt before.
I've eaten a parsnip, Max, or at least a part of a parsnip, mistakenly in the work canteen. I thought they were potato wedges. Helped myself to a healthy portion alongside some, I think it was some chicken, I think. When I bit into one, it was a horrendous taste.
Now, Fullhandy says, would Langdon be up for a marrot? Which is this restaurant called Arby's. It's a fast casual sandwich shop. Instead of turning plants into meat, Arby's is turning meat into vegetables. Their first creation is a turkey-based carrot called the marrot, currently in development. According to the company, the vegetable has the same vitamins of raw carrot and the same look of a raw carrot, but is not a raw carrot. Would you be up for a marrot?
No, I think I'm going to stick to my Turkish mixed grill tonight, Max. No, that doesn't sound good.
Big Sam Jose fan says, I started listening to you all about 6 months ago. I really warmed to Barry during that time because I thought he was a wizened 70-plus-year-old Irishman. Then I found out he was just a random 40-plus-year-old bloke, and I don't know how to feel now. Do we set him free, or are there parts of you that that are as wizened as a 70-year-old man?
I'd say I have the lungs and liver of a 70-year-old man. I don't know if that's enough for him.
Well, hopefully it is. What a lovely way to end 2020. Thanks to listening to us for the whole year, especially when there was no football. I mean, Lord knows why you did. I can't remember what we did, but we did some talking out loud and you carried on listening to it. We appreciate it.
It's quite a damning indictment that our listenership actually increased while we were not talking about football. But it's true.
It's also a damning indictment that a large percentage of the audience said, I loved the drunk pod. Can you be drunk every pod you do? Anyway.
It was very good.
Thank you, Jordan. Listen, and thank you, chaps, for your time. Cheers, Barry.
Yeah, happy new year, everyone.
Cheers, Mark.
Happy new year, everyone.
Cheers, Jordan.
Happy new year, guys.
We'll be back on Monday.
Sorry, let me start again. Can we start again? Sorry.
Sure. I mean, you better now, otherwise this bit stays in. It's all a bit... I mean, keep it casual, Silas. Why not? Yeah. It would not be the biggest mistake, I would suspect, of this podcast, let alone this series. Someone with attention to detail. It's magic.
This is awkward now.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.